Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who carried on podcasting when he just had a testicle removed, so COVID can't stop him. It's Richard Herring! Hello, everyone! Welcome to another remote Richard Herring's lung slowly terminating podcast. I have COVID. I've got COVID at last. It feels like quite an achievement. Though I was hanging around with the Ebola virus the other day. It's a bit pissed off that it's been overshadowed in the news lately by this newcomer. It's planning a comeback, everyone, so watch out for it. Anyway, it calls it Rahalastapa. So, yes, I on Saturday I tested. This is Monday. We're recording this on Monday, the somethingth of January, about 11th of January, I think it is. I don't know anymore. I've been in bed for 2 days. And on Saturday, I didn't even really feel that bad. I just I hadn't really slept overnight. And so I thought that. And the thing, all the symptoms I had were just the same symptoms I've had for the last 7 years since I became a parent, in that I felt a little bit tired. I had a slight sore throat. And then I had to go to sleep in the afternoon. And when I woke up, I just thought, maybe I should just take a test just to be sure. And after all the tests I've taken, suddenly to have those two lines appear on the thing, it happened instantaneously as well. It was absolutely 100% clear. I've had a PCR test as well. It's definitely there. And it's quite exciting to get it. Also, I'm not very ill yet. So it's nice to be carrying on. I think I probably caught it. I went to see Pantoland at the Palladium last Wednesday, which we'd postponed from before Christmas because we didn't want to get COVID. And then I thought, I don't mind if I get COVID now because we can see it. It's inevitably going to happen. It was nice to see Donny Osmond doing pastiches of his old songs, but I'm not sure it was worth dying for. That would be my review of Pantoland. It wasn't really a panto, it was just bits of a panto. It was all right, it wasn't that good. Anyway, this is the first Rahalastapa that I have ever done in my pyjamas. I'm wearing my Christmas pyjamas, if you're watching. It also could be the last, if things take a turn for the worse, it could be my last ever Rahalastapa. So that's very exciting. I want it to go out, even if I die or if I go into one of those comas that people get. I want this to go out and just have a sad picture of me, you know, maybe Chris Evans could hold a picture of me, not that one, and look sad, and then we could still put it out. So it's a big responsibility for our guest this week. It's nice to have it because I've got isolate. We've got an attic where I can isolate where all my stuff is, my snooker board, all my streaming equipment and my puppets. So I can still, and I can work. And I'm not allowed to go downstairs. My wife has to bring me all my meals. None of the rest of them have got it. It's the absolute. I've got a week of having a holiday. I can sleep in. Apart from having testicular cancer, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Both of these things gave me a wonderful break from my family. And I'm drinking Lemsip. And, you know, how bad a disease can it be that the treatment is Lemsip? That's what I'm saying. I'm not going to turn into one of these COVID conspiracy theorists, but, you know, I wasn't expecting to be drinking Lemsip this week. And it works. It is the cure. It's a shame no one knew. Anyway, look, let's crack on just in case I fade a bit. I am a little bit tired. So, delicious. Lemsip. Buy some Lemsip. It's the cure for COVID-19. Oh, damn, they're not sponsoring us. I'm trying to get them to sponsor us. Anyway, my guest this week, but possibly the finest, final ever Rahalastapa guest. That's true of every guest, I suppose, when they're just being on. She is best known for her appearance on the Edinburgh Rahalastapa in 2019. That's why we've all come to see her. She was very good on that. I don't usually listen back, but I listened back to that one, and she was very good. So pressure's on for this one. Will you please welcome the amazing, I've got to remember to put her on, Laura Lex. There she is. Hello, Laura.
Yay!
Lovely to see you.
Hello. Thanks for having me. If you do die of COVID, yes, can I take over the podcast, please? It like that interviewing show, you know, where you just keep taking it. And then when I die, whoever my last guest was, yeah, they can have it.
Well, okay, that's a good idea. I think I'm mainly people I interview are younger than me as well, so that you should work out. But, you know, it could be bad if it had been the Nicholas Parsons week. It would have been a shame. I'm happy to do that. It'd be a bit hard because it's three L's. It's like a Welsh, but you have to do it all in Welsh. very good. Have you had COVID yet?
No. I'm dodging it. I'm surprised I haven't, but yeah. No, I think I'm immortal though. I'm very immune to everything just naturally. It just bounces off my big shiny forehead.
Well, I thought that. I was really starting to think I'm not going to get it at all. It's interesting. You know, again, I think all these things are sort of interesting as long as you survive them as a comedian. Anything bad that happens to you, as long as you survive, you think, well, there's something in this. I mean, I'm a bit late to the party with this one. I think
to get it. Triple vaxxed. Get in now where you can say you had it, but you had it once the scientists had taken the edge off it, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't even get side effects off my jabs. Like, I just feel like, were they real? Like, everybody else I know is like, oh, I had flu for a day after the jab. And I was like, I didn't. I just bounced about. Like,
Have you had your booster?
Yeah.
Because the booster was the only one. My arm felt a little bit sore after the booster. But I've been ill all, like, because I've got kids and because they haven't really been at school. And this is the first, you know, they've gone back to school this winter. I've just had all the bugs again for the last 2 or 3 months. I've been ill for 2 or 3 months, and this is the least bad thing that I've had this winter.
For science, isn't it? Well done, vaccines.
So it's hard to know if the booster did anything or whether I was just ill with something else. But, you know, not to say that I'm generally not saying that other people have not had different experiences. Clearly they have had this terrible, awful thing. But as comedians, it's our job, you know. If I laugh my way through testicular cancer, I have to laugh my way through this as well. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
Hey, look. Do you remember being on my podcast in 2019?
Was it Tony Law? Was he the
other
guest?
Well done. Yeah. Well remember. Yeah. I don't remember anything at all about any of those. I have to say, like, a lot now, my memory's got so bad that I don't really. You know, I do so many of these. Mostly, they disappear. I wouldn't have remembered who the other guest was. I listened back to it because I didn't remember what we talked about, so I just wanted to check what we talked about.
No, I remember sitting on a nice big throne.
Yeah, that's right. We were in a Masonic lodge and we did discuss that. And there was something. Oh, the one thing you said that I wanted to talk about in that was we were talking about the big Edinburgh scandal that year was how much the prices of the flats and the lodgings had gone up.
Yeah.
And you said maybe in 2020 none of us should come up.
And I'm
wondering. I'm wondering if all of this was started by Laura Lex.
Did I curse it?
Laura Lex sounds like the name of a sort of super villain, doesn't it?
My socialist ways. Oh, wouldn't that be the absolute middle class bougiest thing to do, to start a global pandemic just to fix the lives of starving artists going to a festival that they don't have to go to? Yeah, that is a Pixar film waiting to happen.
It just got out of control. But look, the big thing, I mean, let's talk about this straight away, because the big thing that's happened to you, just before lockdown, it sort of started to happen, right? In that I love this story, and it's all in your book, which is called Klopp, actually. If I get the audio book, because it's very good fun to hear you reading all of this out, but also the story of how this all began, this book of Klopp, actually, is like a little movie, and the bit... We were all concerned about, you know, live comedy, which is your absolute meat and potatoes, right? You're a working comedian. You do most of your work in clubs, and just coping with the fact that you realised everything was about to shut down.
Yeah.
And you sent out a tweet, and from there, this whole beautiful thing emerged. So tell us a little bit about that kind of origin of this
idea. It was mad. It was the weekend before... England shut down, and I was in Glasgow doing the Glee, and it was just that weird weekend of being like, I kind of need to do these gigs in case we do lose all our work. But I felt so guilty about like being the reason people had come out to a crowded thing. Not that I was the reason, I was just on a mixed bill, but you know. And I didn't have a mask yet, and you couldn't get hold of sanitizer, so I just sat in the hotel room all weekend. And then when I got back to the hotel after the gigs, I tweeted the stupidest joke about if I ever met Jurgen Klopp, I'd say if we had a baby, we should call it Clip, just so he'd raise an eyebrow at me and tell me I'm a moron, and you know, I'd get naked. And then it was sort of quite late at night, and I quite like doing threads, so I started doing this stupid little thread of like, he'd be very serious and I'd find that sexy. And then I sort of went to bed, and then the next morning I was like, well, I still don't have a mask or any hand sanitizer, so I'm not going to go and traipse around Glasgow like trying to catch this disease that's apparently going to kill us all. So I stayed in my hotel room and carried on tweeting. And I think I might have been the only positive thing happening on Twitter that day. Like, because everything was either, oh, isn't Jurgen Klopp really nice? Or we're all going to die probably on Tuesday. Yeah. So this being the only happy thing, it just went bananas. And I kind of thought, like, you know, I've gone viral before, but this was mad. I think I picked up something like 32,000 followers. I went from 8,000 followers to 40,000 in a day. But I just thought, like, oh, you know, stuff goes viral, and then the next day it goes back to normal. But then there were people, like publishers, getting in touch and going, do you want to write this as a book? And I was sort of thinking, like, no, it's a very thin joke. I think stretching this to a book is very bad idea. And then I lost all my income, and I went, do you know what? I could write a book. That sounds like a really good book, actually. Yeah, let's do that. So, we found a really nice publisher who would let me do it my way, because I was like, look, I've worn the joke as thin as it will go as it is on the Twitter thread, like that's the end of it. I would be conning people out of their money. But I said, like, I don't want it to be like I don't want to objectify the poor guy, I don't want it to be like anything I'm not comfortable with, but if it was an exploration of like actually feeling a bit insecure and sort of having this guardian angel of like sexy football manager keep coming in and sort of saying all the things that you know but you know don't remember at the time, could we do it that way? And the lovely publishers were like, yeah, let's go for it. And so that's what I spent my first lockdown doing, was sort of sitting in my spare room, and I know nothing about football, I cannot explain how little I know. So I was like coming up with these smutty puns and then like running them past my husband going, is this accurate, would you say, in the penalty area or what? Like, oh man, it was so surreal.
I think when, especially when you hear it all told in the audiobook, which I massively recommend, and I agree, you think, oh, this can't stretch to a book, but there's loads of reasons it does, and it really does. But I think those initial tweets you do, the run of tweets that you read through, you know, you've absolutely hit the ground running with it. You're like, it's funny. It starts with a joke, but then the whole think it's so beautifully explored and just so imaginatively explored, obviously because you were sick.
but it really
hits the ground running, so it's so good. But I think it's because it's about sort of fantasy as well. So, yeah. You know, I was thinking it's like a 2-hour answer to Freud's question, "What do women want?" Is sort of there's yeah. the answer, Dr. Freud. That's what one of them wants.
I'm such a like wimp when it comes to the idea of doing things that are edgy, and so I wanted to, like, we did talk about doing it as an illustrated book and having Klopp be this little guardian angel, like a tiny version, like sitting on the top of the wardrobe chatting and things like that. But I wanted a way, you know, like when you want to talk about something serious but you're like, I would roll my eyes at any sort of self-help book. So how can I write an almost self-help book that you don't really realize is a self-help book? Because that sort of stuff definitely makes my stomach churn. But
it's also, it's a self-help. I think, I'm sure it is a self-help for women, but I think any men out there, the kind of men who go, why don't women like nice guys? what do women want? Any men who are asking those questions, like Dr. Freud, like Simon Munn, who does the fantastic joke of what do women want if only we could ask them.
Yeah.
that someone would write a whole book about this as a psychologist and not get to that point. But any men, you just get a real window into the things that would make somebody, no, just another human being happy. It's not even really about men and women. I have to say, though, I do a lot of the things that Jürgen Klopp does in my marriage and my wife, but my wife never has sex with me on the kitchen floor or over there as a result. So well, I do the I do the dishwasher, the bins. I'm a great husband.
Maybe you need thicker rimmed glasses. Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe it is. I'm not sure it'll work. Is what I'm saying. I'm not saying to fellas, if you do all these things, your wife or partner will immediately creep. I mean, there's a lot of knicker creaming basically throughout this book, which is very enjoyable. in a comedic sense, and I'm sure in a natural sense, but I'm not sure it's just this glimpse of a simple life, isn't it, where you can go to Waitrose and you can shop at Waitrose and always have remember to take your bags with you and stuff like that. It's not just about relationships, it's about the kind of idle wish fulfillment of how you imagine your own life could be better, even though obviously it wouldn't really be. I mean, it would be a bit not better, but it wouldn't be way better.
Because I'm such an anxious person, but I think I'm not a stupid person, and I'm very practical. But when I'm completely het up, I don't remember any of the useful ways. Like, one thing goes wrong and suddenly I'm sitting on the kitchen floor going, well, what is the point of even trying to be a comedian? I'm never going to do this, this, and this, and this. But when I wish at that point I had access to all of the very reasonable beliefs I have about myself, but they've gone, they've shut down. And so like that was what I kind of wanted to explore at, was just like if you had access to the best part of you when you needed you, what would that look like if it was Jürgen Klopp, who is much
so
better.
So that's why,
me?
You know, I think it really, it's a short, it's not a long book. No. It's a two hour long audio book, shortish book, which is, I think, perfect. You know, especially for lockdown. You know, I'm finding it so hard to read, except this week when I've got nothing to do. I've been reading books again. It's great. But it's like, it is really, like when I used to go on holiday with my wife before I had kids, I would just read for the whole holidays. Yeah. And this is what this week is turning into for me. But it's a really good length. And the audio makes lots of fun. I like the bit where you discuss how you are going to do Jürgen Klopp's voice in the audiobook. So it's very charming that you make the decision not to try and do an imitation of him.
Can't do it. Through lockdown, I was doing this project through the first bit of like full lockdown. You know, when we were all going slightly mad trying to work out how to put content that was original on the internet.
Yeah.
I was doing this thing called the book club where I was writing a chapter of a book and then at the end there'd be a vote on what would to happen next. And viewers had like 12 hours to vote and then I'd write the next chapter the next day and we'd read it live together on YouTube the next night. And in that, the viewers very quickly worked out that I couldn't do accents to save my life. And so we had all these like Swedish characters, these Italians coming in, and it was supposed to be like a bit of a writing exercise for me, and it just turned into this game of them trying to back me into various European accents and me trying to squeeze my way back out of them. Ugh. Bad.
But you really embraced, you know, I was sort of doing a lot of stuff online. I found lockdown you know, very creatively inspiring in lots of ways, because you were forced to shoehorn. I mean, a couple of the things I was doing in my normal life anyway online turned out to be sort of very lockdown like podcasts anyway. But but you kind of embrace that again because, you know, you were making your main living as a club comedian, as so many comedians were, and hopefully will again, or are again, will again soon. But to suddenly have everything sort of snatched away, you either kind of have to go into a pit of despair or think of something you can do. And you really seem to embrace online stuff. Or do you think you were doing it already?
No, I think I did jump into it. But I think it's that panic of like, there's no other money anywhere in my life other than if I earn it. Like, I don't have parents with money. We were halfway through buying a house when the whole lockdown thing hit, and we so nearly pulled out of buying our first house. And then I got the book deal and I was like, all right, yeah, that'll cover. And like, because of the whole rent market being ridiculous, it was cheaper for us to buy the house and move in month to month. The mortgage is cheaper than the rent was. So we were like, I guess we go with it and hope this thing's over in 2 years. Like that, yeah. That's about, 'cause I'm married to a comedian as well. So we'd both lost like all income coming in. And I think like people that are from that background of like got into whatever they wanted to do via having 6 part-time jobs to support it all, you went back into grifter mode. Genuinely like wrote my first book going, well, that'll pay the mortgage. And like the book deal that they offered me was write the clock book and then do you want to write any other novel? And I was like, that's another year of work, so that's good. I just started a podcast about Days Out, which was very, very difficult to do.
So do you got, because I listened to some of those. I listened to the Richard III one, where you go to Will Duggan. Will. You went to the Richard III Visitor Centre in the one I listened to. It's really good. Had you already recorded?
We'd recorded 7, right, and then everything hit. So we did record a couple of, like, we got my husband Tom to do like a Dungeons and Dragons style day trip to a zoo where we remotely did that. So Tom was like talking us through this day trip. We haven't put those out because of various issues that I'm not legally allowed to talk about. No, we just had to pause, but we sort of pivoted that. So we started doing interviews on YouTube. We found people that worked at or had a passion for places and we interviewed them about their places. So they'd come and tell us. And then we also started doing this weekly podcast called Years and Years, where each week we pick like a 1 year in history and we do a deep dive and researching that and tell the other one about it. So just everything I was trying to do, we just sort of had to slightly go, all right, how do we do that from in the house instead?
But it's, you know, it feels like you just had an incredibly fecund last couple of, I mean, you were always, you know, it's a very impressive amount of stuff you've done before. And you've done, you know, as well as being a club comedian, you've done these sort of award winning Edinburgh shows and you'd big sort of 5-star Edinburgh shows as well, which we talked about last time. So, you know, it's because I feel like a few, you know, both in terms of Edinburgh and lockdown, some club comedians are very much like, I'm a club comedian and that's it, and I'm not interested in doing Edinburgh and losing lots of money, and I'm not, you know, and the lockdown came and they had no way of kind of even making the leap across. I think you know, it was to just suddenly have to diversify like that was difficult thing, and obviously everyone was doing it, so you've got this, you already had this openness, I think, open-mindedness and interest in exploring lots of different things.
I think one of the things lockdown did, and I don't quite know how to verbalize this, so I'm really sorry if this comes out like judgy or not right, but like, I think the circuit's amazing and the circuit produces really hardened, really brilliant comedians. And I certainly spent like 7 or 8 years of my life trying to get really good on the circuit. And then you hit a point where you realize that nobody outside of the circuit knows how good people on the circuit are. So then you start to realize that the people that are moving quicker up the comedy career path are not the ones who are smashing it on the circuit necessarily. They're the ones doing other things, but those things are getting noticed quicker. So in a way, lockdown solved a problem I had where I was so entrenched in needing the circuit to earn a living and I was doing well there, but I didn't have time to do all of the off circuit things that go on the internet or go into the London pool of getting noticed by producers or making shorts or finishing those script ideas that I've been sitting on. There isn't time and energy enough to do the circuit well and do those well. And the circuit, if you need the circuit to make money, can almost distract you from doing the things that push your career up the TV or radio or script path a little bit, which is so counterintuitive.
It is. And I understand, you know, I understand both points of view. And I, you know, and there's obviously it, being a stand-up comedian and just working as a stand-up comedian is an end in itself. And people should be happy with that if that was, if that's what they want to do. But you're absolutely right. If you want to push things forward, if you, you know, it's not necessarily, it's not, it's the, you can still get on TV if you're, if you concentrate on stand-up, but you're absolutely right that I think you need to, this, the competition is so intense. And I guess, you know, because it's a bit skewed, things are a bit skewed towards Edinburgh, and that's why I understand the people who resent it, because it's now become so big, it's almost impossible to get discovered in Edinburgh anyway. But the producers are looking at Edinburgh and they're not going to comedy
even,
clubs.
Are they even going to Edinburgh anymore?
Yeah, maybe
or are they
not,
just
maybe
waiting
not.
To see what's at the Soho afterwards?
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like a bitter twat, which I have a real tendency to fall down a bit of a bitter twat rabbit warren, but are they going to Edinburgh in the same way, or is it looking for people that go viral now? Like, I don't even think it's Edinburgh anymore. I think it's the internet. I think it's TikTok, Instagram, to a lesser extent, Twitter, but it's who can make shorts for that, because that's your script writing, that's your acting, that's you are you an engaging face, and that's a much quicker measure.
Yeah.
Why, as a producer, would you go up to Edinburgh and watch loads of shit hours of comedy where you can just see what's got 900 retweets and see if the, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think, you know, I'm happier with that. I mean, I think, again, I think I said this in the last time you're on, but, you know, you're going to Edinburgh spending maybe £10,000. And if you've got £10,000 to spare, you can create something online that's amazing. And then that's the thing, you know, you can spend 2 or 3 months putting together something and have a budget and then send it to all the producers. So yeah, I mean, I would prefer that system, to be fair, that because that is at least people being creative. And I'm delighted to see so many people are, you know, that's what's so great about this, that a genuinely good idea that's just almost come from nowhere, you know, has almost just appeared as if by magic, has then gone on to rightly be a successful thing. That, yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, maybe, well, maybe it would be hard to do a sitcom of it, wouldn't it? Because you'd sort of need Jürgen Klopp to be in it.
Yeah. Like
maybe when his football manager career. I mean, on the last show, you talked about how your husband didn't like you doing jokes about sex because, you know, he felt that was a private area. But the book is, you know, is you imagining being married to someone else, which I know you joke around about within the context of it, but is he happy because he's getting his mortgage paid?
Yeah. His biggest problem was that he's a Tottenham supporter. And
oh, is it?
Now I'm like weirdly associated with Liverpool. I think he finds it so stupid that I've become, because my novel that's coming out this year is about netball. And he's just like, I just don't understand how you've become a sport writer. Like, the Klopp book got nominated for like Sport Book of the Year.
Wow.
And Tom was just sitting there like, I just don't know what parallel universe I have fallen into that this has happened to you. Like, this is insane.
But isn't that what's great about it, is because I'm not that interested, and I know a little bit about football, but I'm not that interested in any sport. But this, you know, you don't, it's a book that, if you're interested in sport, it doesn't matter. If you're not interested in sport, it doesn't matter. So it's kind of for everyone, and you can, you know, it's and it's just really funny. It's just like funny. So it's a very, and I always prefer the audiobook. And I know you say in the audiobook you're a fan of audiobooks. So it's always great when you get the author, I think, especially if the author is a comedian, because it would be crazy for you to have got someone else to do this. But it's just enjoyable. And at 2 hours long, it's, you know, it's
almost
only
like an
super
extended podcast.
So, you know, it's because often I'm listening to audiobooks and I'm enjoying them, but I'm thinking, oh God, I've got like 25 more dog walks to get halfway through this fucking thing. You know, you want to move on to the next thing. So the one that you can actually listen to in a day or is, and I like those. I mean, my last book was Well, the one before last was The Problem with Men, which was just a 25,000 word book, which is probably about the same as this, isn't it? You know, it's a good for the modern world and for our lack of can't be able to focus on things anymore, which I think is a real lockdown thing as well. You know, I think it's become so hard to focus that it's just lovely to have something so short.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, look, so let's talk about some stuff we didn't... We might talk about your other book as well later, where you did talk about... You talked about netball in the last half an hour. We covered a lot in that half an hour in netball. But you were brought up in Taunton, which was very near. Yeah. I was brought up in... I don't think we talked about this. I was brought up in Cheddar. I grew up in Cheddar. I moved to Cheddar when I was eight. Ah. So you were Taunton born and raised.
Yeah.
And do you feel, first of all, Taunton is the county town of Somerset?
Yes, it is.
Do you feel, I feel, if I was born in Taunton, I'd be annoyed that Somerset wasn't called Tauntonshire. Because most, you know what I mean? It's like mostly, not in the southwest so much, but most of the other places, other counties, it's like where I live in Hertfordshire, there's Hertford, you know, Yorkshire, York. It's named after the main, shouldn't it be called Tauntonshire?
But that's Somerset is such a pretty word.
It is.
I always thought if I had a kid, I'd like to call them Somerset. I just think it's a really lovely name.
Yeah, there is Somerset Moor, isn't there?
So yeah.
It's been done before.
I think Somerset's beautiful. It's Taunton. It's a bit...
Tauntonshire. Taunton. I'm from Tauntonshire.
Yeah. Taunton. But I always liked, I can't remember, because the Tone is the river that goes through Taunton. And when I learned that it was called Taunton because it's a mash of Tone Town, Town on the Tone, that's where Taunton comes from. Taunton. And I just remember thinking, that's fun. But it's not as nice a sound as Somerset.
No, I guess
Somerset,
not.
It's so principled.
Do you know that, and I've learned this from a YouTube comment about one of your things, that your school in Taunton had an assembly about you. Are you aware of that?
No. Oh, my God. That's... They are thin on the ground for subject. Like,
I don't know what happened.
It's not like they could read any excerpts of any of my work.
There's a girl who's replied to one of you. Someone's just done an assembly about you in our school. So we're jumping
into
your school.
Oh, my God, you poor bastards. I really didn't go to a good school. And that is such a damning indictment of my schooling.
There's never been an assembly about me at my school, so I'm very jealous.
I presume it was in a biology lesson and they were sort of pointing out all the different words you can use for vagina.
But that's it. You could become a successful comedian and an author, even though you've gone to our school. That's what they're saying. Who is your favourite Taunton-based celebrity apart from yourself? Do you know any?
God, are
do you know?
Any?
Did you ever? Did there are? I'll give you my favourites. You've got it's a good place to produce funny, well-rounded people who are great. Jenny Agutter was born in Taunton.
Oh, and I children.
There was I mean, I do still love her, but I used to, you know, I wrote about regretting. She's about, I don't know how much old. She's a little bit older than me. She's like 15, 16 something years older than me or something like that. And so she was in Taunton at the same time as I was in Cheddar, but she was obviously way too old for me then. There was one time I walked past her. I walked past her in the BBC canteen when I was about 22 and she'd have been about 37 or 40 or something like that. And I went weak at the knee. I did a joke about it, but I actually went weak at the knees when I saw her. But looking back at that, I think that was the moment, wasn't it? We could have had a little torrid affair, her kind of having a midlife crisis and me being,
hey, look,
that was
start
our moment.
Stop tweeting about it. There's a book deal.
It's too late now. Well, you know, I still love her, but, you know, I'm married now and, you know, it's not quite, it's, we're both a bit too old now, but there was that moment. It's finding that moment, but, you know, that's life, isn't it? It's just, you've got to grasp your moment. Should have grasped my moment with Jenny Agutter. Deborah Meaden is from Taunton, who's a previous guest on this, who I love. Gary Rhodes is from Taunton, who I'd forgotten.
I think I knew that.
I'd forgotten he died, so I've just had a very upsetting. I saw like it, the 2019, you know, to 2019. I think, what? Gary Rhodes hasn't died. And then I looked up and remembered that Gary Rhodes died in 2019, and I'd forgotten, and now I'm upset again. So thanks for that, Laura Lex.
Sorry.
It's your fault. What's is there anything you can recognize? Did you stay in Taunton until you were 18, or did you?
Lived there until I was 18. Still go back every year.
What's your big recommend for Taunton? What do you think people? Why should people visit, and what should they go to see?
Oh, Taunton's just lovely, and so is all the surrounding area. Like, so I'm technically from a little village called Norton Fitzwarren, which is just outside Taunton, but the Quantock Hills, up Tur Hill, Coffelstone Hill, all that walking bit, and actually in Taunton, my favourite bit is where the cricket ground is and the Brewhouse Theatre. There's a little riverside shopping area down there, and that used to have the most fantastic cook shop. I'm not entirely sure what's there now, but it's this really pretty little bit of independent shops and bridal shops, and it's all cute and lovely.
That is nice. I don't know Taunton that well, given that I grew
up quite near
there.
There's not much there, really.
I went to see the cricket there sometimes, and I've played there, but not for ages, actually. I'd forgotten all about the theatre in Taunton. It's nice, isn't it?
It's nice, the Brewhouse, yeah. And then every time I go, they're shutting it down, and then the residents save it and then forget that they saved it and stop visiting it, and so it shuts down again. And you think, if you want it that much, just start buying tickets to stuff. It's not that difficult.
And did you drink much Blackthorn cider as a youngster?
Oh, yeah. Warbeck, that's the spoons that we used to go to all the time, and it's got like a really long bar in it. And, Western cider. We used to buy our Christmas tree from Sheppy's Cider just up the road.
Yeah. Perkin Warbeck's one of my favourite historical characters. But it goes back to Richard III. We were talking about your Richard III thing, and I actually went down a little rabbit hole after listening to your thing of looking up Richard III and the princes in the towers, and then Perkin Warbeck. Was he pretending to be Richard from the
town? Yeah, he was somebody that they wanted to bring in as he was a distant relative, and he had a claim to the throne, but it got quite quickly squashed.
Yeah, he wasn't really. Perkin Warbeck and Lambert Simnel, those were the two. Yeah. They're two names I'll never forget from my school time history, but Perkin Warbeck's a good guy.
Good name too.
Good.
Perkin.
That's very good.
Perkin and Somerset.
Perkin and Somerset, that would work well. Before you became a comedian, you worked, according to Wikipedia, you worked as a search engine optimizer.
Oh, I did, yeah.
what is that? Tell me more about that.
That was, what was it? So I was in sales, and I used to have to try and sell people video content for their websites, where you'd make like a daily little video that had all the keywords in that you wanted your site to come up for. I knew nothing about it. I remember going to the interview. I'd graduated the year before. Then I'd gone out and done like a mini ski season thing. Then I came back to London and went, right, I need to get on with this comedy thing. I just need a job to pay enough for me to stay in London. And I went to this interview and he was like, you clearly know nothing about technology, but you are quite willing to walk into any room and talk to people. And I was like, yes, I am. So I got this job in sales for it, but I hated it. I did it for about 2 years, I think, and then I left.
That's a long time for a job, though. 2 years is still like you stuck it out for a long time.
It felt like my whole life was just in the toilet. Because like, it was in Canary Wharf or South Quay. And like, I'd lived in Somerset for 18 years. Then I'd gone to Canterbury to uni and done drama. And then suddenly I really wanted to be a comedian, but I needed to work from like 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. doing this like, oh, you know, the sort of job where everybody goes out on a Friday in their like fancy suits and just gets smashed. And you're like, I don't want to do this, but I don't have any, like, I needed enough money to stay living in London. Oh, God, it was excruciating. And I'd be like in the office from 8 till 6 trying to chat to people about how to get onto the first page of the Google rankings and what was going on this SEO forum and blah, blah, blah. And then I'd get in a car and go and do a mirth control gig in deepest, darkest middle of nowhere. I was like surviving on about 2 or 3 hours sleep. Ugh. Oh, well, I hated that period of my life.
It is. I didn't do many jobs in London. I was lucky because I did about 6 months of doing temp jobs where I moved around quite quickly. I didn't stick any of them out for very long. And then I got an advertising sales job, which I got sacked from, which meant I could go on the dole, and then we could do the enterprise allowance. So I had a year after about 6 months. I had a year where I was getting my rent paid and getting like £40 a week, and was able to live off that whilst I struggled to make some money from comedy, which is a shame that that isn't available, though there's so many people trying to do comedy now. It would bankrupt the government even more. It's basically a furlough. You forget, I think people don't realise how hard it is to, and increasingly hard to get through those first years when you're trying to do stand-up.
Yeah.
So what year was that you were working? Was that what that would have been?
What would that have been? 2010 to 2012?
Right.
Maybe a bit less than that.
I saw a clip of you doing Spank in, I think, about 2012 or 2013.
Yeah, well, I started doing comedy in 2009.
Right.
But I couldn't afford to stop working until 2015. 2015 was when I did the SEO job for a bit, then I did temping for a bit, and then I moved down to Brighton and I had two jobs. I worked in a kitchen shop and I worked at the Brighton Dome, both on 0 hours contracts, like, so I could shuffle them around comedy. Right. But then I never got that moment of like, I'm quitting my job to be a comedian, because I just, one day my boss phoned me at the kitchen shop and was like, you haven't been on the rota for a couple of months. Do you still need the job? And I was like, oh, I guess I don't. Like, I guess I've sort of edged into having enough comedy work. So I never got that, like, I'm out of here and I'm never coming back.
It's, you know, but I thought it was interesting. I watched you on Spank in what, early 2010s, and then I watched your I just watched your Live at the Apollo, and one of the jokes is the same joke about that you're, and it's kind of nice. That is, that does that feel good to know that joke you were doing in 2012 went to, you know, you would, how would you, you see, you know, to think that within like 5 or 6 years you'd be on Live at the Apollo. That must be pretty cool. Yeah. And getting to do those jokes.
I never thought I'd get something like Apollo. I just thought I was such an uncool circuit dweeb. And I was like, nah. But then to be able to do it and not worry about it, like knowing that by the time I did it, I was like, I've got 3 20s that could all work really well as a like choppy, like pew, 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 pew. And so you just, I know some people would be like, you're still doing a joke from 8 years ago. But I'm like, it works. No, I'm keeping it in.
I think that's, although there's an extra bit on the original one. There's an extra bit about, I don't want to do the joke. There's an extra punchline in the Spank version that wasn't on the Live at the Apollo version.
Was it too filthy? It probably got cut. I probably did it live and then it got cut because they edit out so much. I really garbaged my Live at the Apollo because they said, I was doing a whole bit about Debenhams and they said, you can't say Debenhams, you have to say department store. And this was my biggest worry for the whole thing. So I walked out and I got going and I was like, this is going all right. And then I went, Debenhams. Oh, fuck, I knew I was going to do that. And the whole Apollo just sort of went bananas. So I had to sort of wander into the wings and be like, look, I can do this again. I'm really sorry. And so it was such a nice moment of them, like, seeing the curtain, behind the curtain, and me being like, oh, piss. I will never be professional.
People do love that. When we went to see Pantoland at the Palladium, where I probably got COVID, there's like so many bits in that show where they pretend that something's gone wrong. I mean, it's allowed in Panto, right?
Yeah.
But they play it really straight, as if they've got, you know, so everyone believes, Obsession, my kids believed it, but I think everyone sort of believed it. Me and my wife going, well, that was clearly a tap. My mother going, no, I think it really, there's a bit where there's Paul Zerdin's ventriloquist dummy, he turns it on so it works independently of him. And there's a bit where Don, and you know, they're like 5-6 weeks into the run now, there's a bit where Donny hasn't, picks it up a bit badly and it goes up, it breaks down, and then he's talking to him back saying, what's that, you know, they're doing this thing, and everyone thought that was really good. There's no way it might have happened once and they thought, let's keep it in. But Donny Osmond, absolute professional, doing all that, Paul Zerdin hitting him with these zingers, and he's going, oh, you know, as if it's the first time he's ever heard them. So to the extent there was a 1% doubt in my mind.
Would you ever do Panto? Have you done Panto?
I haven't. I mean, yeah, I mean, it was sort of cool to go to see it at the Palladium. What I really loved about, more than the show, which was fine, and Julian Clary was in it and he's brilliant, but it wasn't really a panto because it was just, it was more of a variety show. And I'm glad I took the kids to see a panto before Christmas as well, because it wasn't properly a panto, but it was entertaining. There was lots of good stuff. But all around the proscenium arch, they had the posters of, you know, all the pantos that have been in that place for 40 or 50 years, like Peter Sellers was in one of them.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, there was one that was Cannon and Ball, Rod Hull and Emu. This is all before your time, really, but Marty, there was just every single person. John Inman was in it from
Hypixer.
And that was the one I really wanted to see, just because everyone was like a bona fide Derek Griffiths. Everyone was a bona fide star of their time, but I bet it was a really fucking good pantomime. You're all sort of aware as you're watching, especially when you're watching on the 6th of January or whatever, that it's a job that people are doing because they get paid a shitload of money for it. And so they were very good. They were very professional and they did a good show, but you're also aware. With Donny Osmond having to go through all of his hits and go through the motions, and mainly people were there to see Donny Osmond. The audience were nearly all over 60, I would say. There was hardly any kids in the whole place.
Right.
So they were all there to see Donny Osmond, and Donny Osmond just really going over his old hits and then slightly taking the piss, but slightly doing it seriously and doing a very sincere song about how clowns are amazing.
Did he do any Mulan ones?
No. Oh. I don't think. I don't think so, but I don't know. But there's a sort of sadness to it. Julian Clary's lucky because his whole persona is, you know, I'm too good to be doing anything. So it really works for him. But I think I might find it just a bit too much of a ball ache. There was a part of me thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to be on this stage, do a panto, have all those big stars have done it. And I think you would have fun. But I've always got so you know, it's a lot of time.
Yeah.
But I think they, you know, the big stars are earning just enough money to.
And what else are you doing in January?
Well, it's true. I could be doing December and January, but it's over Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah, it only just starts before Christmas, doesn't it? Panto traditionally is like end of December into January, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think I'm the kind, you know, Al Murray's done them and I think he's enjoyed them. But I don't think I'm the kind of person that Panto's falling over themselves to get. Should I get Rich Sherringham to do all of his cock? Oh yeah, maybe not. So I don't really know what I would be. I mean, I suppose I could be Baron Hardup being a pantomime dame would be quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
could be the front end of a horse.
I could be the back end of a horse. In this day and age, though, it hasn't affected anything. But I wonder, there's the sort of political correct nature of pantos having to exist in the modern world while still having quite old world values. So a man dressed as a woman for comedic effect is sort of the kind of thing that I think in 10 or 15 years people might be going, oh, can we still do this? I hope we still can, because it's a different tradition than than something unpleasant. But yeah. Gary Wilmot was the pantomime dame, and he was pretty good. He was very good, actually. But we saw one in Welwyn Garden City, which was professional actors, but no big names. And it was it was better.
Yeah, they're so fun.
Yeah.
My granny used to take us every year because I've got like a billion cousins. I think there's something like 24 of us. And she'd always said, like, you get enough stuff for Christmas, so I'm going to take you to a thing. So we'd always go to a panto in the week between Christmas and New Year in sort of Sherborne or somewhere like that. It was great.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a lovely thing doing that. And it's, you know, when you've got young kids, my son is, it's so hard to get him to concentrate and sit down. So if he sits down and properly watches something, it's good. But Panto Land, he was bored. But in the second half, understandably, he was not that interested.
Yeah, bit grown
more,
up.
There was an old couple behind with had a walking stick with lights on it that lit up, and he was more interested in that. So yeah, that's how you get my son. But my daughter pretty much enjoyed it. But they've been to see a few things. We're going to go and see Frozen the musical in the next month, which I might be all right. Might be okay. We'll see. Let me ask you some emergency questions before I ask you what's going on in your future and about your new book. I'll go back to this one. I've asked you a few, but I will in the last time. But I'll try not to double up. This is an interesting. I don't think I've ever asked anyone this question. This is question 611 in the Orange book. The second Orange book. Would you rather be able to channel the spirits of dead celebrities or never have to replace the light bulb in your bathroom?
Bathroom light bulb, please.
Yeah, okay.
I know that's very boring, but I've met lots of live celebrities and I barely wanted to hear what they had to say.
Okay, so, fair enough.
Not sure I want the dead ones interrupting me.
I think if it goes, because in my bathroom, we've got kind of quite a few of those little lights that I don't even know how to change them.
That's what we've got too.
Yeah. So I think I might agree with you. Yeah. Okay. I won't ask you that. I'll get into some rude ones. You were very funny with the rude ones, even though you said you wouldn't do rude stuff, but you found a way to do rude sex stuff without upsetting your husband, which is very, very impressive. Okay, look, this has come up. I've never asked anyone this one either, Laura. You'll see why when it comes out. It's terrible. If you could only ban one of the two, would you ban badger baiting or masturbating? I mean, it's not a question, is it? Are you aware of what badger baiting is?
No.
Badger baiting is, I'm not quite sure. I think it's basically making badgers fight each other, or certainly shooting badgers
I'm
very cruel.
Ban that. Badgers are hench.
I mean,
we shouldn't mess with badgers.
Who would ban masturbating? I mean, some people would ban masturbating, but, you know, I wouldn't have them on my podcast.
No.
All right.
Masturbating is just one of the best things in the world. It's free. It doesn't hurt anybody. And there's no calories and it doesn't affect climate change.
If anything,
we should be doing more of it, because if we were all more distracted doing that, we'd stop doing all the other terrible things we're doing.
Well, make the most of it while you can is what I would say. People, like a lot of people tweet me saying, oh, you can spend all week in bed masturbating because I have to self-isolate. I can only really do one or two a day maximum now.
So, now that is a tragedy.
Yeah,
that is a tragedy.
When I think back, even 10 or 15 years, I would look at that and go, oh. So I've got to save it up. I've said this before, but I can't afford to waste one now. So if I've got any chance of the real thing coming up, I have to plan very carefully.
Yeah.
Because I can't. In the old days, you could just waste the first one and the second one would be ready to go.
Not now.
Not now.
It's time management.
Might get two in a day if you're lucky. But I've only got one ball as well. I don't know if that's massively affected.
Hmm.
You know, I didn't do like a dipstick thing before.
No.
I should have done a before and after just to see whether it was.
A bit and then a puff of air.
Yeah. Whether the new guy, the old guy, the one that's left might double his efforts.
A step up. It's his time to shine.
Yeah. Well, it is, but I don't think he is, but it's hard to tell. It's so many things go wrong, Laura, as you get older. This, you know. So what I'm saying to the youngsters out there, masturbate as much as you can. I'm not sure if it's this. I don't think it's the same for women.
And then do a little Sharpie just to measure.
Just do that.
Just, and then pop that on your windowsill.
And I'd also say to my young fans, don't badger bait. It's not good. We're not with
that. You don't want to upset badgers. They're big and there's a lot of them.
There are. Yeah, they get. I see a lot of dead ones. I saw there was a dead badger when I first moved to this house. There was a dead badger on the roadside.
In my bed.
On the roadside, but it's far enough out of the village that no one was going to do anything about it. Just on the roadside, and I watched as I drive past once or twice a week. I would just watch this badger gradually decompose.
Welcome to the neighbourhood.
That's what the countryside's like. Eventually, it just disappeared. But I'm tempted to go back and see if there's a badger skull there or anything. I'll ask you. Let's try and find a good. I'll go to earlier in the book when I was trying hard. You know, if you're saying, you're worried about stretching Klopp actually out into a book. I've done four books of these. I've done four fucking books of just questions. I'm not asking that. What is the most disgusting thing you've ever had in your mouth, Laura Lex?
Kimchi and dolce latte.
Okay.
It was disgusting. And I have a very active gag reflex. Okay. We were in a Michelin-starred restaurant and I put it in to try it and it tasted so revolting that I hocked it back up into my hand and then didn't have a napkin, so I had to walk through the restaurant carrying a handful of kimchi and dolce latte to go and put it in the toilet.
Wow. I don't know what it is. What is...
Kimchi is fermented cabbage and dolce latte is like a soft cheese, like a really strong cheese, and it was together, and it was like, you know, when you put something in, your body just goes, this is wrong, get it out, it's going to kill you. And so I had to get it out before I was poisoned. It was so disgusting.
Good. I knew one of them would pay off, and that was a very interesting. It says a lot about you. I don't know. You go around eating whatever that is, kimchi and dolce latte. Look at you. Who do you think you are?
I'm very fancy. Well, I think it's more fancy. Tom really liked it. He was like, just try it. And I don't like being the sort of person that doesn't like things. So I was like, well, I'll try it. And then, just sicked it back into my hand.
Yeah, I'll try and eat most things. I think that I've got a few things that I think from like, I don't really like creme, you know, something that's got that texture of creme caramel, that kind of, those kind of things make me feel sick.
Yeah.
And gazpacho soup I had when I was young, and then I was sick after it. my friend's girlfriend, who had made this cold soup, and I think I was actually physically sick afterwards. So there's a few things that make me feel like...
Just the thought of it, yeah.
Mackerel, because I was sick after I ate mackerel. Now I can't really eat mackerel.
I love mackerel, but yeah, that is a nasty thing to sick up.
I might be able to go back to it. I don't know. Right, so you've got a second book, and we talked about netball because I'd written netball in my book last time you were on, and you were saying how netball was, not your favourite sport, but you've written a novel about netball. So tell me, is that coming out this year?
Yeah. Is it
ready to go?
It is. I'm just going through the copy editor's notes at the moment and having that. Did you have this with yours where like the copy editor obviously knows how to write properly, and so she keeps adjusting my sentences, and I know she's right, but my brain's going, no, fuck off. I wrote it the way I wanted it. Fuck off. So I have to do this read through so many times because the first read through is just me reading all of the notes and going, no, no, no. And then I read it again and go, yeah, okay, all right, you're probably... And then I read it again and go, yeah, that is easier to read, actually. Well done. You're very smart and good.
It is annoying. I think, again, as a stand-up, it's very hard to start. I know you have been directed in your Edinburgh shows, but it's very hard to... even take an opinion from someone else because you've worked out what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think, like with stand-up, you have a bit of an idea and you half write it and then you go and try it out and you see if it's got legs.
Yeah.
And you slowly piece something together by doing that. Whereas with a book, you just sit on your own and write the whole thing. And then by the time you find out if any of the public like it or not, it's too late. It's published. That's so stupid. Like, stand-up is so much better in terms of developing a product you know is going to work and you're not worried about it. But yeah, the new book is probably the material I would have been doing when we chatted in 2019. That was about netball and how I just felt like netball is this joke played on women. The book that I'm writing, I've just finished writing, it's actually based on a TV idea I had where I wanted a vehicle to get a load of women together in a TV show of all different ages and backgrounds and stuff. And I thought, how do you do that without them being mums or working in the same place?
Yeah.
Because I can't have children. So I just, and I'm so tired of watching stuff about mums and I just didn't want to do workplace. It's been done. So I thought, sport, that happens all the time, but it's mainly usually men's sport. So I thought, like, a netball team, like that could be interesting. And then I thought, well, who the hell plays netball? I'm not going to write a book about like professional netballers. I don't know anything about it. So sort of developed this character in my head who, you know, she's late 50s and her husband just walks out on her one day and she sort of realizes she doesn't have a job anymore because she's retired. The kids have grown up. Her husband's gone. And she's just a bit like, I don't know what I do. I don't know what my life is anymore. Like, I feel like I've done the main bit and now I was just going to potter along quite happily, and then he sort of blows that apart and she just doesn't know what to do. So she and her friend start a netball team and it just sort of opens her world back up to meeting different people and sort of trying to work out how to have a life again after what she thought would be a life has gone. But I thought, like, netball, I think, is such a like little niche world of memories of being at school and just learning this ludicrous game. And then I think like 95% of women stop playing it at 16 when you leave school and just never really think about it again. But I learned from doing it as stand-up that when you bring it up in a room, you just get these shrieks of going like, oh God, and everybody remembers what role they played, like what position they were, and you start going like, do you remember chest pass and shoulder pass and bounce pass and the 3 second and pivoting on one foot? And it just brings back this amazing feeling of everybody going, oh, netball. So I sort of wanted to make it into something.
Great. So when's that out?
June.
Fantastic.
Which feels a lot closer this side of Christmas.
And are you doing the audiobook again?
I hope so. I haven't been told if there's going to be one, but I hope so. Yeah,
There will be one. The thing I think that they should change in publishing is you should do the audiobook before you do the final draft of the book, right? Because every time I do an audiobook, I go, oh, what? And like, in fact, with the problem with men, I managed to get a few things changed in time. It was just in time to go back and just change them before it got printed up. Because they do it fast now. They do print it up pretty fast, and so they can do it a bit closer to the time. But in the old days, if you spotted an error, you just had to wait for if there was ever a second edition or a reprint of it. And it's so frustrating to go, why did I do? Because within a proper book as well, within like a novel, you've done 80,000 words or 100,000 words or something like that. You know, it's so difficult to be on top of absolutely everything, which is why editors are very important.
But that's the thing, because they've slightly fucked it with me, because now they're going like, you have to have this edit in 8 months before the publication deadline. Whereas I'm like, no, I don't, because with Klopp, actually, I wrote the whole thing in 7 weeks and it was released within 6 weeks of me finishing the edit. So I know how fast you can turn this around. So if I want another 2 weeks, I'll take another 2 weeks. So they've just slightly made me into a garbage author now.
But I think they also factor that in. I'm writing a book about my experience last year, and I'm about 2,000, 3,000 words in at the moment. And it's meant to be ready by the end of the month. But my editor's already said, oh, you know, we'll give you more time.
Yeah.
So I think because they know I did the other one so fast that they kind of go, oh, it'll be all right. And mine, luckily, I think once you've done a few, it gets a lot easier to, they sort of trust me really to get on with it. And on my last one, they basically had nothing to say about changing anything. They said, yes, that's fine, put it out. Not quite, but almost. But they should have spotted a few of the mistakes that I then later spotted.
I saw some advice on Twitter where if you're looking for like typo errors and stuff like that, change the font and suddenly you see things differently.
Right.
Like, you'll pick up on spelling mistakes and stuff that you can't see when it's all still been in the font that you've written it in.
That's interesting. Mm. Because every single time I've ever written a book or even a program or anything, the minute I pick it up and turn it to the first page I turn to, I'll see a mistake straight away, which maybe that's why, because it's in a different place. Maybe it's just littered with mistakes. Have you been doing stand-up? Is stand-up going this year and it's hopefully going to carry on going?
Yeah, I'm back to stand-up now. I did my tour through the lockdown. I did it all online rather than waiting and constantly reshuffling. So I'm back to circuit now, which is just lovely.
Yeah.
It's so nice.
And are people coming out, and is it viable?
I think it's been like a real mix of either it gets cancelled or it's sold out and there's a waiting list of 200 people waiting to go. Like, it's so up and down. But most of the stuff I've done, it's just been great. People are really ready to get out and get on with it. And it's that nice thing of going, the people that are a bit nervous aren't here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, they're at home, and I'm still doing some Zoom gigs. On New Year's Eve, I did a Zoom gig for people at home. I'm hoping that those just stay forever, because for people that can't get out or just like want to see something but don't want to do a babysitter and tickets and taxis, you know, sit at home and watch it. They're really great.
Terrific. And do you think you'll be doing, are you going to be doing Edinburgh this year or is it just the book now?
No, we are adopting. And so everything of my year post the book coming out is a little bit of a massive question mark because I don't really... I know where we are in the process with it, but it's just such a question mark on timings for the whole thing. So I don't know. Everything past June is a bit of a... But I don't think I'll ever do Edinburgh again.
Really?
I'll never do a whole month up there again. There's no point. It doesn't do anything. So no. I don't... Like, I would go up for maybe a week, 10 days and warm up a show ready to tour it. But the days of me getting a show ready and then showing it off like Edinburgh is a plinth to show it off on, what's the point? I've done several five-star shows up there and it doesn't... What's... Like, I don't know what I'd be looking to get out of it anymore. Sure. It certainly isn't money.
And if you're going to have a family as well, it does completely change. I'm still working out whether I think Katie, who says hello by the way from Drunk Women Solving Crime, is going to go up and do 10 days. So I'll probably go up and do at least the podcast, for 10 days. But it's quite a good place to do the podcast.
Yeah.
But stupidly expensive. And we still I paid the rent for 2020 and I've only had half of it back. So you know we're already if you can do it and lose money without even going, that's quite impressive. But good luck with that's very exciting about it's nice to be able to could you get how much choice do you get when you're adopting a child? Do you have like a row of kids? Because I wouldn't have chosen my son.
You wouldn't have gone for yours.
I'd have chosen my daughter, but my son, I'd have gone, now let's chuck him back in. We'll have another go. So it's quite, is it like they all come out and you go, we'll take that one?
It's a bit like online dating. There's a whole brochure and you know, you're in a brochure and they're in a brochure and various social workers play matchmaker and go, hey, this kid's got no attention span, neither's Laura. So let's see if they can make each other laugh for a bit. You can be as prescriptive as you like, but it obviously, if you walk in and go, hello, this is a list of attributes I need my child to have, they'll probably look at you and go, are you the best parent? So you sort of have to go in pretending you're going to be good at everything. And
yeah, what I like about being a parent and what I like about the madness of it all is just the random. I mean, I suppose there's a genetic connection that they might end up being like you, but they don't necessarily.
No.
And I think it's just that random nature of not knowing what you're going to get at all is kind of exhilarating and weird and fun. What a wonderful thing. That's going to be
I'm excited
terrific.
About it. Yeah. I think I'm kind of, now that I've done my grieving on not having biological children and I've gone through the stage of thinking, well, I'll adopt and then after a year of settling in, it'll be the same as biological children. I'm actually like, I'm weirdly excited to have a kid that's not biologically like me because I hope then I won't expect them to be like me in a way.
Yeah.
In some ways, I like who I am. In some ways, I'm like, oh, thank God, I'm not passing any of this nightmare on. Like, it dies here and you'll come with your own stuff, but I'll see you as your own person because you're not an extension of me. You are a person that turned up in my life and hopefully it will make it, you know, I'll really respect that you are your own individual rather than I think I would have a tendency to be like, well, I don't like that, so why do you like that? Whereas well,
that's
hopefully
very healthy.
Seeing
it's,
you.
It's very healthy. I think a lot of parents don't realise that, and it's a very difficult thing to, you know, to not see that connection. You know, I see a lot of myself in my son as much as I take the piss out of him. It's only because he misbehaves in exactly the same way as I used to. But it is. It's so important to not let. I mean, even just in parenting, though, it doesn't. The way you were brought up, not to allow that to necessarily cloud. Because I think the inclination is anything that was good, you try and foist on them for you, and anything that was bad for you, you try to direct them away from.
Yeah.
And it's you've got to let them. You've got to let them come to you and direct themselves, really. And it's hard. It's hard, but it's you're going to have a great time.
I hope so. Very excited.
Extreme. Oh, well, I'm really pleased about that, Laura. That's a lovely piece of news. And well done on giving up Edinburgh.
I'm 2 years clean.
Yeah, that's we were forced to go cold turkey by some circumstances, and now we don't have to go back to it. But I think I will be back. I haven't done a stand-up show since 2017-18, and I'm kind of keen to go back and do some new stand-up. Mm. But I don't think I'll do it in Edinburgh this year. I don't think it's just finding the time. You know, it's finding that time to invest the amount of time you need to invest in creating a new show. It's just so insane, even when you've got an idea. But I've milked my balls
once a day, though.
for as much as I can. I don't know if there's a stand-up show in it as well, but we will see. Anyway, enough about me. This isn't about, well, it is, it's mainly about me, this show, but it's also about you. Do go and buy Klopp, actually. I'd recommend the audiobook, but the book is also fantastic and very, very, very funny. Well done, Laura. I'm so pleased about everything that's happening. You well deserved. And thank you for doing the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's my pleasure. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Laura Lex. Thank you to Scant Regard, who provide the music for this series. I am indebted to Christopher Evans, not that one, for all his hard work in setting up these remote feeds. I'm indebted to Ben Walker, who helps us with all the ads and the live reads. I'd like to thank everyone else who knows me and who made this podcast the moderate success that it has grown to be in the 14 years since I started podcasting, which is now where we're basically at. Anyone else I want to thank in these credits? I'd like to thank you, the listener. Thank you for listening. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz on GoFasterStripe.com production. RichardHerring.com/gigs. Do come and see us live if you can. The live ones are the fun ones. They're the best ones. I love doing them remotely too, but lovely to have it in front of an audience. So come and see us in London, in Leicester, in Bristol, or at the Leicester Square Theatre, which is also in London. Bye, everyone. I love you so much. See you around.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.